This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
What did you like better, Jedi or The Empire Strikes Back?
Empire.
Blasphemy.
Empire had the better ending. I mean, Luke gets his hand cut off, finds out Vader's his father, hand gets frozen and taken away by Boba Fett. It ends on such a down note. I mean, that's what life is, a series of down endings. All Jedi had was a bunch of Muppets.
There was something else going on in Jedi. I never noticed it till today. They built another Death Star, right?
Yeah.
Now, the first one was completed and fully operational before the Rebels destroyed it.
Luke blew it up. Give credit where credit's due.
And the second one was still being built when they blew it up.
Compliments of Lando Calrissian.
Something just never sat right with me that second time around. I could never put my finger on it, but something just wasn't right.
And you figured it out.
The first Death Star was manned by the Imperial Army. The only people on board were stormtroopers, dignitaries, Imperials.
Basically.
So when they blew it up, no problem. Evil's punished.
And the second time around?
The second time around, it wasn't even done being built yet. It was still under construction.
So?
So a construction job of that magnitude would require a hell of a lot more manpower than the Imperial Army had to offer. I'll bet they brought independent contractors in on that thing. Plumbers, aluminum siders, roofers.
Not just Imperials. Is that what you're getting at?
Exactly. In order to get it built quickly and quietly, they'd hire anybody that can do the job. I think the average stormtrooper knows how to install a toilet main. All they know is killing in white uniforms.
All right, so they're bringing independent contractors. Why are you so upset at its destruction?
All those innocent contractors brought in to do the job were killed. Casualties of a war they had nothing to do with. All right, look. You're a roofer. Some juicy government contract comes your way. You got a wife and kids, the two-story in suburbia. This is a government contract, which means all sorts of benefits. Along come these left-wing militants and blast everything within a 3-mile radius with their lasers. You didn't ask for that. You have no personal politics. You're just trying to scrape out a living.
Then. It is 24 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of November in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us. We are high above the milk packing district here in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon, where the children are bright faced. Faced is an interesting word. It's like winged in that it seems like you ought to be able to say ed at the end of it instead of it with just a hard D sound. Doesn't really work when you say it out loud, though. It's a thing that seems good on spec, and then you do it, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, I don't think people actually say face it.
I'm going to start doing it. I'm going to start doing it, not today, next Wednesday. I'll begin that. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. You want to be part of today's program, 503-505-6964, with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, amusements, whatever it is you might want to bring to the conversational table today. You can do it at 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964, as of, wait, now. There we go. Somebody's Skype status is, Rick Emerson, will you be my wingman? Yes, yes, I will, sir. Also, not until next Wednesday, but then, yes. You can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. It is rick@rickemerson.com. If you'd like to engage with us electronically, that's one of the ways. You can also get in touch with Dawn at Taylor that way, D-A-W-N, Dawn at rickemerson.com. Messaging available via Skype at Rick Emerson Show, and also via the text box at rickemerson.com, and so forth, and on and on and on and on, and et cetera, so on and so forth. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, November 24th, 2010, and welcome to Day 12. Don't forget, we'll be here live tomorrow. That is Thanksgiving. We'll be here live tomorrow on Thursday. So we'll be doing a Legion of News at noon over at Cascadia.fm. And then at shortly after 1 o'clock tomorrow, Thursday, we'll be here for your dialing and dancing and listening and enjoyment and so forth. So that is coming up tomorrow, Thanksgiving for 2010. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Wednesday.
A woman is arrested with gift-wrapped marijuana. There's a pudding spill in Iowa. And there are sharks in a canal in Arizona.
Really?
Yes.
No fooling.
No fooling.
Actual real sharks?
Actual real sharks.
Not like where the Jetson were the sharks.
No.
Not
no,
like sharp
teeth sharks.
Okay. Thank you for not making me say like package shark or... All right. In Arizona?
Sharks. In Arizona.
Real sharks.
Real sharks.
Okay. Also coming up today... Wow, really?
Yeah.
Okay. It's strange that I didn't hear about that, because normally people like to terrify me by sending me things that have to do with creatures living in the water, just waiting to maim you and kill you. All right. Coming up later on, about 10, 12 minutes from now, we'll talk to Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. He's going to be calling in earlier than normal, because apparently he's just jumping out of his skin with excitement about Four Loko for some reason. So we'll talk to Aaron Mesh, screen critic from Willamette Week, about that and whatever else. I was just assuming that guy that, you know, whatever's on the page bears only the slightest resemblance to what he's actually going to be talking about. So Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week will be joining us here in just a bit to talk about the recent banning of Four Loko in your fine city and state. We'll also have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's question, what does Jules call the kid with the briefcase in Pulp Fiction? Is it Brad or Brett? And as I mentioned this last hour during Legion of News, where I didn't give the actual choice. I just said, what is the name of the kid who has Marcellus' briefcase in Pulp Fiction? And immediately everybody filled up, the text box with their... But the thing is, it was perfectly split. It was split evenly, right down the middle between Brad and Brett. So we will endeavor to find a definitive answer to that in today's installment of Pop Culture Authority. What does Jules call the kid with Marcellus' briefcase in Pulp Fiction? Is it Brad or is it Brett? We're going to get to that later on. Also, another installment of the greatest songs ever made today, by the way. And I mean, I know that goes without saying because blah, 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 greatest songs ever made. Today's song really is just a thing of absolute, joy and wonder. So we'll get to that, next hour sometime, I don't know, after 2:30 or so. Today's installment of greatest songs ever. Also, your penis watch coming up today.
And a taser watch.
And a taser watch.
Which I didn't write on the
really?
Board. But
awesome.
I just found it right now. So, and
taser.
A taser watch.
Taser watch. Awesome. So that is all coming up. So you got those headlines. You got Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. You got your Pop Culture Authority. You got your greatest songs ever made. Your penis watch. And your taser watch. Today's Rick Emerson radio program brought to you by Sorrell's Vintages. You can find them at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. They are known for vintage, retro, and fantastic and fantabulous furniture, which really is quite. And I got to tell you this, if you've ever been to Sorrell's, and I know you have not been there yet.
I have not, but I do have a love of the vintage furniture.
I got to tell you, it's the greatest place. And I'm not just saying this because even before they were sort of involved with the program, I've purchased many things there. The finest lamp. I mean, it sounds like a small point until you really think about it, because you go through your life and you just buy. You know, it's like you get to the point where you want to be able to buy a couch or something and go, like, I'm set. Is that the Fight Club guy says, you know, where David Walker says about his music collection, where you go, like, look, I'm taken care of. From here on out, I got it, you know, I got it handled. And so rarely can you do that, but I got to tell you, I get this lamp, and it's in our bedroom at home. It's the finest lamp I've ever owned in my life. I mean, it's just all other lamps. I mean, they just, they just pale in comparison. It's just beautiful.
Do all the other lamps in your apartment know that, in your house know that? Do they know you prefer that lamp?
Well,
does it make them feel bad?
I think they've picked up on it. I mean, I think that they've inferred that, from the many compliments that I shower on this lamp. It's just one of the most beautiful pieces of furniture, to whatever extent a lamp can be a furniture. I mean, it's just beautiful. It's just a fantastic, item that I have, and I got it from Sorrell's. So they are at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, right across from the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books. We'll be talking more about them later on in the program. All right, it is 503-505-6964. We got Mr. Aaron Mesh joining us here in a bit, so without further ado, we'll get to the news with Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A Portland, Oregon woman has been arrested after sheriff's deputies in southwest Iowa found 65 pounds of marijuana in two large gift-wrapped boxes. The Daily Nonpareil in Council Bluffs, Iowa, which is a great name for a newspaper,
isn't it? It seems almost wholly inaccurate. I'm just guessing.
The Daily Nonpareil.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this, but that seems like it almost has to be an inadvertently ironic name.
Says sheriff's deputies stopped 51-year-old Robin Klein Monday afternoon on Interstate 80 in Pottawatomie County. A drug dog sniffed out the marijuana hidden in the boxes, which were wrapped with bows. Nearly $6,000 in cash was also found in Klein's 2010 Dodge Charger. She was charged with possession of marijuana with intent to deliver, among other charges, and was released on bond Monday. No attorney for Klein was listed in online court records.
You don't really think of somebody driving a Dodge Charger gift wrapping their marijuana. It seems like that is at odds with the choice of automobile there. Because somebody who drives a Dodge Charger, they're somebody, they don't care for life's fancifications. They don't really need to please other people. They live by their own rules. They're out on the gun, under the run, in a bad situation, with a bad reputation.
I can only assume that the police in Iowa were, you know, sort of already suspicious of her operation there, because you don't generally call in the drug dogs to sniff large gift-wrapped boxes, which I'm sure is what she was counting on. But still, it's like, you know, you pull somebody over for just, you know, a traffic offense, and they have two large gift-wrapped packages, particularly at the holiday season. You don't usually call in the drug dogs.
I guess I thought she was just being nice. Maybe she was doing this to avoid detection, you're thinking.
I could be wrong, though.
See, I thought maybe she
maybe
was just.
Gifts.
Maybe she was just polite. I mean, maybe she just felt that that was a little bit. It was a little bit of accoutrement with which she would decorate her gifts of drugs to her friends and loved ones.
Yeah. I tell you, 65 pounds of marijuana, that's a heck of a gift.
It really is. That's the gift that keeps on giving, Don. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A reward is being offered for information leading to the arrest of those responsible for two recent cases involving the illegal introduction of fish into Yuma, Arizona waterways, one of which involved a shark. In the first case, around September, adult peacock bass were found in the Walton Mohawk Canal system near Yuma. They are a non-native fish that can grow fast and smother other fish species in the waterways. The second case involved a 32-inch shark of unknown species, but similar to a lemon shark, that was found dead in the West Main Canal in Yuma near 1st Street and 14th Avenue.
Now, you refer to these as a, I believe your actual phrase was a shark.
Yeah.
So is that actually the case?
Well, it's 32 inches long, which is almost 3 feet long.
That's but, I mean, is it a thing that will...
lemon shark?
Is it a man-eating or a man-nibbling shark?
I don't know.
Okay.
State fisheries biologists said they believe the shark was caught in either San Diego or Mexico and transported to Yuma and disposed of in the canal. They had not yet determined if the shark was put into the canal alive. Arizona Game and Fish said sharks, both freshwater and saltwater, are restricted live wildlife in Arizona, and possessing, transporting, and stocking them in Arizona waters is illegal.
Also, the whole thing is just creepy. Have you ever read that book, Close to Shore?
No.
It's a great book. I actually gave it to it's one of those books that I do the whole Bill Adama thing now, where I don't lend books. If I give somebody a book, I mean, you know, unless it's something that has like special value to me or it's like the only copy I have or something, if I give somebody a book to read, I just sort of, you know, I bid it adieu, not unlike Charlotte saying goodbye to her baby spiders at the end of the book. And I'll just say, you know, like, read it and then pass it on to somebody else, because, you know, it's like I've had to develop this sort of Zen attitude to my books, because I had too many of them, you know. Because it's, you know, even if I just read 24 hours a day, it's like I was never going to be able to get them all again. And it seems like it felt selfish to just be hogging my books and keeping them in the house where others couldn't read them. So I've just started kind of, when I lend a book, I just let the person have it. So as a result,
so it's kind of like a catch and release program.
It's exactly what it is.
Books.
That is exactly what it is. Because again, it's not that I don't love books; I really do. But it's like, why would you hide your light under a bushel? Or in my case, you know, your books in like a bunch of dusty crates in your basement, where it's like you forget I didn't even know these were here, because they're buried under like a bunch of radio station T-shirts, which I feel compelled to own for reasons that like can't be explained.
Maybe you should set those free as well.
You know, nobody wants those though. That's the thing. Nobody wants something that says like oldies 107.5. Where oldies is misspelled with two D's, by the way.
I'll bet half-frozen homeless people would like them.
Probably, you know, but I don't feel like they really appreciate the shirt for what it is. That's a thing where they don't, you know, they don't really appreciate the spirit of the gift there. They just want to use it to keep warm, to not die from exposure. Mm. You know, that's not what that shirt is meant for. No, that shirt is about aesthetic. So there's this book called Close to Shore, which I no longer have, but which is fascinating. It is the story of the shark attacks off the coast of New Jersey in 1916 that were the basis for the book and then the movie Jaws. It's what Peter Benchley was inspired by. And at the time, I don't think anybody really knew about it, because it was, you know, because it was, I think, 60 years or whatever before he wrote Jaws. You know, and it's not like he just ripped it off. I mean, it was inspired by true events, but he tailored it, you know, into something else. But it's just the most fascinating and terrifying book about what they believe was a single rogue shark that was off the coast of New Jersey and savaged several bathers. And then at one point, I swear to Christ, and, you know, they have all of these, historical records and newspaper articles from the time and interviews that were conducted later in the 20th century with people who were there and who witnessed it. And at one point, and they include a map in the book that makes this a little easier to understand, but at one point, the shark, they believe he just somehow he got confused, and there's a place where it seems as though you are heading back out to the ocean from being close to shore, but in reality you would be swimming further inland. And then sure, the shark at one point ended up literally in the middle of the town because there was this section of the ocean that basically turned into like a large creek that flowed through the center of the town, and then there was a footbridge over it, and then it ran out the other side of the town and rejoined the ocean. So, and again, and he sort of lays this out visually, and we'll talk to Aaron Meshier in just one moment, but he lays this out visually explaining how, you know, a creature could be, you know, confused and end up in the middle of the town. So imagine that you're just walking through the middle of town, and it's like 1916, and it's like, I don't know, you're doing a thing where you got that barrel hoop and a stick, and you're going to, like, you know, go to the general store or whatever it is you're doing.
As was the custom of the time.
And you have an onion on your belt, exactly, and you're walking through town. And there is a creek, and then there's like a little wooden footbridge over it. Imagine just looking in the creek and just seeing like a huge black shark fin just coming. I mean, I can't even imagine how my brain would react to that.
Well, in 1916, you would think it was a demon.
Jesus, there was this moment where the kids are fishing because it's hot and it's summer, and hey, what better thing to do than to get down into this water, which couldn't possibly have any sharks in it.
And it's too hot to roll their hoops with their sticks.
Exactly. So the kid jumps into to the creek and he's splashing around or whatever, and then of course he just vanishes under the water. And, and he's gone. And his friends are like, hey, where's Ted? Wasn't he here a second ago? I don't know. Let's see what's happening under the water. Maybe his foot is caught in something. Not thinking like his foot is caught in the stomach of a shark, which has consumed him. So the kid sort of vanishes. His friends kind of jump into the creek, which is, and I say creek, but I mean it's however feet deep. Mm-hmm. I mean large enough for the thing to get in there. And so his friends jump into the creek. They go to the bottom. And his friend said the most terrifying thing, recounted later in the day when he was interviewed by a newspaper about this. The kid said that they swam to the bottom of the creek bed just to see where their friend was. This is the most horrifying phrase. His friend said that he then saw what he described as, quote, the biggest, blackest fish you could ever imagine leaping up at them from the bottom of the creek bed and coming straight at them. And they were like, F this, and they got out, and it was, you know, and then they saw the shark sort of making its way down the creek bed, and eventually it vanished again into the ocean. And it's all true. That's the thing, is it's a completely true story. It's so unbelievably terrifying. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's called Close to Shore. I strongly recommend that you read that, by the way.
Well, the fish and game guys in Arizona are actually concerned about this, because if somebody was, you know, bringing in, like, sharks and dropping them in the waterways, because there are sharks that can live in both saltwater and freshwater. So it's like, we really don't want sharks. So people don't do that.
Operation Razor Teeth is what that is. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, I say, hoping that I'm picking up the correct line. Is this Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week? Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week.
Hello?
Hello.
Aaron Mesh?
No, I have no idea. The problem is there's actually, there's like five different calls that all came in at once, and I may have, in fact, picked up the wrong one. Let's try this. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week.
Hello, Mr. Emerson.
Hello. How are you, sir?
Yay.
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fantabulous. Do you have big Thanksgiving plans? Are you looking forward to embracing tomorrow with zest and gusto?
Oh, I am. I plan to see as few people as possible.
Good for you. Well done. Are you anti-people in general, and is it exacerbated by the holidays, or is it a Thanksgiving-specific kind of societal avoidance that you engage
in? Oh, I'm not really anti-people, but I get to have a four-day vacation, and I plan to spend it, you know, with a few friends and not eating a lot of food.
Hey, explain to me now this is the way that it was positioned to me by Cheryl, or maybe I'm misremembering this, but she said, hey, Aaron's going to be calling in a little earlier than normal on Wednesday. And when I'm remembering the email, it seemed to indicate that your calling in early was tied in some way to the fact that you wanted to talk about Four Loko. And so I just assumed that you were going to be blitzed by about 2 o'clock and you wanted to get this out and on the airwaves while you still had the power of speech.
Let's just say that's accurate. I don't think it is in any way, but I think it's more fun if we pretend that it is.
Excellent. So the new issue of Willamette Week is out on stands now. You can also see it online at wweek.com. So what is your take on the Four Loko thing? Because it went from like zero to banned in like a day and a half. It seemed like it was like I'd only even heard about this stuff once, and that was actually last Thanksgiving at a party I went to. And then it sort of, you know, it's fallen out of my off my radar. I wasn't really thinking about it. And then I heard about it again when these idiots in Washington drank a bunch and overdosed on it. And then it was like 5 seconds later, they banned it.
Well, there's a few points to make quickly on Four Loko and its surrounding beverages, which are known as alcoholic energy drinks. One is that they're terrible. Like, they're just awful. You know, on the level of taste and enjoyment and, you know, sipping your beverage, they're just dreadful.
Yeah, no, we had some last week, actually. Dawn consumed the better part of a can of Four Loko during the show, and I forget what you described it as tasting like, but it was something like radiator fluid mixed with evil, mixed with bile, I believe.
Yeah, with cough drops melted in it.
Yeah.
I would describe it as taking Energizer battery and coating it with Jolly Ranchers.
Does it seem like a thing that there's really, I mean, there are only two kinds of people probably that now have consumed Four Loko. Those who just don't want to, I mean, it's like they want the shortest distance between two points, the second point being, I would imagine, choking on your own vomit. And the other type of person.
The quiet blackness of the grave would be how I describe it, but sure.
Exactly. And the second type of person is, you know, the guy who just said, well, they're going to ban it. I better get me some of that. Because I walked in the Plaid Pantry, right, and the guy was just like, we can't keep it on the shelf. So, all they did was just decide that everybody was going to be disallowed from drinking it, which then resulted in everybody drinking it as quickly as possible because it was going to be gone.
No, and the OLCC actually held an emergency session on Saturday in which they decided to ban it immediately, as in as soon as the meeting was over, the drink could no longer be sold at convenience stores in the state of Oregon, which one of the members of the OLCC, a guy named Bob Rice, rightly pointed out that would create an instant black market for the product still on the shelves, and the rest of the OLCC members, the other four, immediately ignored him.
Of course. Well, because the OLCC...
Because we're in the middle of a mass hysteria moment, and so let's not have logic come into it.
All I know about the OLCC is that, and I should say, by the way, that many years ago on this program, there was a guy named Ken Palke, who was, and maybe still is, I don't know, a member of the OLCC. And he would occasionally come on the show and to sort of, he would try to clarify points about Oregon's rather interesting approach to alcohol sales and the occasional prohibition. But it was not too long after that there was some woman who was on, a member of the OLCC, who got busted for, wait for it, DUI, and she had the most Gollum-looking mugshot you've ever seen in your life. It's like her eyes were trying to escape from her head. It was like you would take an Ileana Douglas and jammed an air hose into one ear and then just set it at 700 PSI. They're an interesting group of folks, the OLCC.
I think, tragically, she is no longer on the board.
That's hard to believe. So is this – now, this is statewide, right? This isn't just Portland where they banned it.
Right, and this is statewide. And here's the fun angle, at least from my point of view, is that meanwhile, while the OLCC is rapidly trying to ban the sale of product that's already on the shelves that has been sold via distributors, and while the head of the OLCC is taking meetings with shipping companies throughout the state saying, please don't let trucks with this beverage come into the state anymore. Meanwhile, one of the companies that manufactures this beverage is out on Northwest St. Helens Road in Portland.
Wow, really?
It's called Charge Beverages, and it's about a $3 million a year company, and they make Gravity HG, Core High Gravity HG Orange, and Lemon Lime Core Spiked, all of which have now been officially banned by the OLCC and are, like, dangerous substances according to the FDA.
So here's a question that we had, actually. The way that the ban was instituted, they said they singled out, I think, eight different beverages or eight different caffeinated alcohol drinks or alcoholic energy drinks, depending on who you're trying to scare. But our question was, so does it, if you just put out, like, if a company put out a different drink that was basically the same thing, is that legal? In other words, did they ban these specific drinks or the actual concoction, the ingredients?
They've banned these specific drinks, and I suppose if the company wanted to lose more money, they could put out another one and then have that one immediately banned by the FDA, or cited by the FDA, I suppose, is more accurate.
So they could do,
but,
if they, yeah, you know, if they.
The idea of alcohol and caffeine combined is not exactly new and not going to get banned in and of itself. Like I went out to a bar last night and I was having a meeting and I ordered an espresso stout, and it was quite pleasant. And you know, I did not try to chug it in 3 seconds, and I got a little caffeine buzz and a little beer.
You know, you should just make it a point now, whenever you cover this story, to do it while drinking, like an espresso stout or perhaps a vodka and Red Bull or something. Just, you know.
Irish coffee?
Yeah. I mean, just make it, you could make it your sort of a Thompson-esque trademark. Where
you're
always,
coffee, Spanish coffee, you know, all the coffees.
Yeah, exactly.
All the international coffee blends.
So what is going to happen to this company that, they've now, it says $3 million a year business, and now, their flagship products are being, legislated out of existence. What is their plan? What do they do now?
Well, they're diversifying, as they say, which is to say that they're making the same product without caffeine.
You know, it does make you wonder. I don't know. It just it makes you wonder exactly what the sort of, you know, what the end game is. If the theory is that they want to make the drink safer, and then the thing they go for in the drink is not the alcohol but the caffeine. If you're facing some sort of like an eventual situation where they ratchet down the allowable alcohol content in these drinks, you know, just across the board, which is not like it's outside of the realm of possibility that the OLCC would do that, because they have a pretty draconian view of alcohol anyway.
Well, I think the question kind of becomes, and this is my opinion, granted, and not that of Willamette Week. I'll put that in quotations, but. I think it becomes a question of whether or not you're legislating public safety, or whether you're legislating class. Like, because these drinks are just not very classy, and supposedly they appeal to juveniles. But you know, the way of saying something that appeals to kids is more or less saying it's low class.
Yes.
So, like what do kids like? They like crappy things.
So this is the booze equivalent of the different punishments for, say, crack cocaine versus powdered cocaine, where it's actually
right.
It's actually a class distinction.
You're really being punished for living in an inner city.
Yeah,
that's really it. It's some sort of a ghetto tax on your prison sentence.
I think you could make an argument, and I'm not sure it's one I'm willing to make because I haven't done the research, but you could make an argument that this is targeting young African-American males.
Well, up until recently, and I guess maybe it's not that recent, but I mean, Don, you know, you can speak to this especially, but I mean, if you spend any time in Southern California in the 1980s, it's not like St. Ide's billboards are being put up all over, Beverly Hills.
No.
You know, that was a thing that was targeted almost exclusively at the black community. So what else is going on in this week's issue of Willamette Week, sir?
This week in the paper, we've got a roundup of new burger joints in town, including Little Big Burger and Sea Burger in the Pearl District, both of which I'm told are excellent. I reviewed a place called Joe's Burgers out in Bridgeport, which I didn't think was quite so excellent.
Is this, when you say Sea Burger, is that C just like the letter C?
The letter C.
I'm wondering if that is related to or somehow attached to the C bar.
It is. It's actually a burger window next to the C bar.
Okay, really? Because is there more than one C bar? Because there's actually a C bar in Southeast Portland, not too far from my home. So I didn't know if there was that place might have actually relocated, I guess.
Let me turn the page on that and see where exactly the C bar is located. I read the piece this morning, but yeah. Northwest 4th Avenue.
All right, so I wonder if it's so they've either gotten a second location or it's or they've
sorry, it's actually
they've moved
no, sorry, it's not C Bar, it's Couture Ultra Lounge. My bad.
It's funny that two names that actually sound nothing alike somehow conflated in your head.
No, but the word C was the letter C was in there. It's for cookie. It's good enough for me.
C is for couture. it's something about I don't know. It's something about crushed plum colored velvet pants there. But I don't even know what to do. Before we wrap all this up, I want to ask you: Are you a Harry Potter enthusiast?
I like Harry Potter just dandy, but I haven't actually seen the new Harry Potter movie.
So, is that a thing you plan on seeing at some point in the immediate future? Because I'm curious.
I suspect that my Thanksgiving weekend will include a wizard.
That was my question, because how your antisocial tendencies were going to face off with your desire to avoid coming into contact with humanity.
It has less to do with coming into contact with humanity and
nope.
Oh no!
Oh, what have I done? I've done something. I've done something horrible. All right, I'm sorry. It's
by the way.
All right.
Am I still on the line?
Exactly. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And I find that to be a salient observation you just made.
Yeah, dinner parties suck. And so, you know, whether it's a holiday or otherwise, I desperately don't want to be at them.
Excellent. Well, I'll tell you what, I will let you skedaddle to get on with the rest of your person avoidance the rest of the day. We will have you in sometime in the immediate future. Have a happy holiday, my friend. We will talk to you soon.
Happy Thanksgiving.
There you go.
Aaron
Mesh from Willamette Week. There we go. And we've got this. It looks to be a call coming in from Los Angeles. Let's see here. Hello, Sir Madam, is the case. Maybe you're on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Hello. Hi. Yes. How can I help you?
Hey, Rick. Jim Roop here.
Jim Roop.
Jim Roop.
Wow, this is unexpected. Wait, I feel like I don't have your theme ready, because, you know, why would I?
Well, I'm calling as a friend, not in a representative for my employer.
No, of course not. You're not calling as a representative of CNN or of any news outlet concern in any way, shape, manner, function, or form. I have to say, we were talking to a writer for one of the local papers here, and I looked up and I saw this second phone call coming in. And I was like, that's odd. Who would be calling me from Los Angeles? It's just a city filled with thieves and pimps. Who do I know that would be? But of course, I forgot, Jim, that you reside in the City of Angels, sir. Hello, how are you? What brings you to the show, my friend?
I just had to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. That's all.
Can I just ask you a question? Is it possible that you sent me an email about 4 weeks ago?
Yes, it is possible.
Okay. See, here's the thing. I remember, and then I thought later that I had just imagined the whole thing because there was, you know, because Lisa and I had been emailing or something, and then I saw it was going through my inbox, and it was that thing where I was searching for something else, and I was flicking through my inbox, which we were talking about this the other day on the show. I just has hundreds of messages in it, and it's like I saw your name sort of scroll by, and I meant to go back and go and to check and to see when that email came in, because my inbox just it fills up sometimes faster than I can get to it. And I thought, well, is that a recent email or was that like an email from like last year or something? I'll have to go back and check. And then I completely spaced on it. So now I feel like a jackass. So I apologize for not replying to what was a recent email. So now I'm
okay. First of all, never ever apologize, because you have thousands of fans. We have one Rick Emerson. It's easier for us to contact you than for us to expect that you. You can contact all of us back in any kind of time. So
no,
cool.
I've missed you, Jim. I've missed the way that only you can make me feel like the prettiest girl in town. I should say this first and foremost, because this call caught me just so off guard here in the best possible way. And now I'm just getting emails and text messages and whatever, just pouring in. Everybody on Earth wants to say hello to you, Jim Roop, and to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. But I should say, right now, before we do anything else, one of the most frequently asked questions, so much so that I actually have I keep meaning to post a blog entry about this, specifically addressing this. One of the most frequently asked questions is people are asking, you know, if we're going to have the CNN folks back, you know, on the show, and if you guys are going to be doing your live call-ins and whatever. And the mid-length answer to that is that. And I understand why this is, but CNN, like, you know, anything else, CNN is a business, and the way that CNN's operations and agreements with web-based broadcasters function, as opposed to regular terrestrial over-the-air broadcasters function, makes it something that is just, it's just beyond what we can afford right now. And we have a budget here. We're a licensed capitalist enterprise, and we've paid to have our music license, and we've paid to get all of our ASCAP and our BMI licensing taken care of, so we can be above board. CNN, unfortunately, right, is just not something. That we're able to cover. The cost of it exceeds what we are able to do, and that's nobody's fault at CNN. And I don't bear any grudge about that. I mean, it's like they do what they do, we do what we do, and we tried to find a happy medium. And right now, it's just not really possible. Which has nothing to do with you guys, because that is in a totally different department from you guys. It's a separate issue from you guys. It has nothing to do with you guys at all. It's just the business side of CNN is just not able to make it affordable for us. Right now. And I know that they do keep a little bit of a, how shall I put this? They're a little bit conscious of where you guys make appearances and whether or not you are perceived to be representing the network, sir.
Well, that's why I call you a fan.
That's right. You're just calling as a concerned citizen that wants to make your feelings about life in general and our the state of affairs in 2010 known to our many listeners. So, what is up with you? What are you doing? Is it the same life of Roop that we've come to know and love, where you're reporting all day, drinking all night, or have you augmented that to drink during the day as well?
Yeah, I'm pretty much drinking starting about 10 a.m. now. Yeah, so it's an all day and an all night thing. But I'm still doing the same thing. It's still work. It's still great. You know, there are a lot of Rick Emerson listeners who talk with me on Facebook from time to time and things like that. So I still keep in touch with you. I kind of know what's going on, which is why I thought I'd call and say Happy Thanksgiving before my next live shot comes up at the top of the hour.
All right, so I will let you go here in a second, because I got to do that. So I do feel bad for not getting back to you. So I will do that, and we'll. It means a lot that you took the time to call in. Thank you. I mean, I think I speak on behalf of the listeners, on behalf of everybody. I'm not very often at a loss for words. You were the last person that I was expecting to hear from today. So happy Thanksgiving on behalf of all of us to you and your family and to everybody, my friend. We will find a way to talk to you sooner rather than later, sir.
Well, I gotta say, it is so cool to hear your voice in my ears again. And I'm thankful you're out there.
Well, thank you, my friend. Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen, and who come hell or high water, we will find a way to reinstitute into the pantheon of the Rick Emerson Show. There you go. Jim Roop, thank you, sir. Happy Thanksgiving. There you go. Wow, that was unexpected.
That's Jim Roop.
How weird. Well, I kept seeing this like number coming in going 323. I'm like, who do I know in the 323? Like, nobody. And there you go. Wow.
Yeah.
That was really weird.
That was.
I mean, it's awesome, but it was really weird. I don't get I don't get thrown or flustered that easily. But that was not what I expected to be on the other end of that phone call. Good for him.
What a nice man that Jim Roop.
He really is. You know. I mean, you know, have you met Jim?
Mm.
Ah, he's the coolest guy, and he looks just like Principal Rooney from Ferris Bueller's
really?
Day Off. Exactly.
Oh, that's awesome.
He looks just like Ed Rooney. When you meet him, it's the weirdest thing. You just expect that, you know, grace thing to come out, and instead it's a... Are you hearing a little bit of reverb on my voice today? Don Taylor!
Yes,
it's
I actually
weird.
Am.
There's a little bit of reverb that I can't seem to attract in. I kind of like it, though. I think I'm going to go with it.
Is one of these other mics turned on
something? No, I wondered if maybe my voice had just become even more loud and obstreperous, and it was ricocheting off the halls here.
It's just the depth of your wonderfulness. It's just because, as Jim Roop said, there's only one Rick Emerson.
See, that's why I miss that guy. I miss this sort of sycophancy that only he can really provide. There's thousands of listeners, one Rick Emerson. So, I mean, really, it would be amazing if I had responded to his email.
Yeah.
The thing, he emailed me like a month ago, and I didn't really register it at the time. I was like, I was flipping through my inbox looking for something else, and I saw like, you know, you see your emails scroll by, and Jim Roop, and I went, and in the back of my mind, I was like, Jim Roop? Well, did I see that right? That couldn't be. And then I was like, I got to go back and check that. But then I found the email I was looking for, and I, you know, was busy responding to that. And then I forgot to go back and double check it. So it sounds like he actually did email me like four weeks ago. And then it just went callously unreplied to.
This is why North Korea is building bombs, and because they're just angry.
They're angry over my failure to respond to Jim Roop's email.
You and President Obama not responding to emails.
Was I diplomatic there when I was talking about the CNN thing?
You were.
I think you
explained it well.
Which is really true. Again, it has nothing to do with Jim or Lisa or Steve Kastenmeyer or any of those guys. And when I say it has to do with CNN, whatever. I mean, they do what they do, and it's a business, and that's fine. And
it's complicated to try to explain to people because they're like, we want to hear Jim Roop and Lisa Desjardins, right? To explain that, well, CNN like won't let them.
Yeah, the easiest way to explain it is that we have talked about this, that music licensing. And I'm not going to belabor the point because whatever. I mean, it's like I'm not going to sit and bitch about it because there are worse problems to have. But music licensing for online broadcasters is a lot more expensive and more complicated than for terrestrial broadcasters. Now, it's the same thing for CNN, that for reasons that I don't even know what the reasons are, but it doesn't really matter. For whatever reason, the online broadcasting cost to be a CNN affiliate is just beyond what we're able to pay right now. And at some point, that might change. It might not. There might be some movement on their side or this side or whatever. But, there's no bad blood or anything. Not with us, not with the CNN business department. Certainly not with those guys, as you can tell. It's just one of those things we're not able to make happen. But, but hope springs eternal. So, stay tuned because one never knows what the future holds. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was delightful.
This is a strangeness in the air today. Mm. It really is. I don't mean it's bad. It's just something weird afoot. A little bit of oddness is floating around in the ether.
Let's not even do a show. Let's just sit here and just talk about stuff.
Okay. Let's do a little bit of news, then we'll take a break.
Okay.
And on the other side, we got your pop culture authority coming up. Today, we'll answer this question. In Pulp Fiction, what is the name of the kid who has Marcellus's briefcase? Does Jules call him Brad or Brett? We'll also have another installment of the greatest songs ever made, plus your taser watch, your penis watch, and more. This is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, This
so weird.
Don Taylor.
All right, here's Don Taylor, kids.
Let's do that penis watch.
All right, here's your. I'm just getting just nothing but text messages. People wanting me to relay their comments and or drink recipes. The Jim. Oh, they all wanted to know what he was drinking today. I should have asked. I always just assume it's scotch. He's a scotch man.
He sounds like a scotch drinker.
I am fairly certain, if I remember correctly, this was either a thing we were gonna do. And it, or I think we actually did do. I think we actually pulled this off. I think our friend Keelan in Las Vegas, because Roop and Lisa Desjardins, they were both in Vegas, I think, for one of the conventions or for some political happening a couple years ago. And I'm pretty certain that our friend Keelan, that we, through CNN in a non-creepy, non-stalking way, found out what hotel they were staying at. And I think our friend Keelan dropped off some vodka for Lisa and some scotch for Roop and then didn't tell them where it was from. Just said, like, the Rick Emerson Show says, and just, like, left it there or whatever. So, what is this, penis watch or taser watch, Don?
Penis watch.
Here's your penis watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a-melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Here is Don Taylor with your penis watch for Wednesday.
The people of San Francisco are making their voices heard yet again, and this time their voices are saying, leave our penises uncut.
Okay.
A group of people calling themselves intactivists, led by Lloyd Schofield, are working to get an official ban on circumcision in the city. The ban would make it illegal to, quote, circumcise, excise, cut, or mutilate the whole or any part of the foreskin, testicles, or penis, unquote, of anybody under the age of 17, even for religious purposes. The punishment for violating this law would be no more than 1 year in jail or a fine of no more than $1,000. Some people say the ban would violate their religious freedom. Others say circumcision is mutilating the genitals of babies against their will. And still others say, I just want my kid to have a penis that looks like his dad's.
See, now that's the creepiest thing. That is the thing is, I have seen so many comments from women that follow that line of logic. Cosmo did a thing a couple years ago where they were talking about the great circumcision debate because it was like a letter to the editor. And it was like, dear Cosmo, my husband, you know, doesn't want to circumcise our kid, but I want to because, and so the next issue, it was one of those things where they knew they were onto something because the next issue of Cosmo, the entire letters to the editor section was like pro and con. It was like the great debate about what to do with your kid's junk when he's born. And I was astonished at the number of women who said that they wanted their kid's penis to look like their husband's penis, which is creepy, like on 100 different levels.
It's creepy and about the stupidest reason for the stupidest way to make that decision.
Well, that's like saying you got to stick silicone in your daughter because you want her boobs to look like yours.
Yeah.
I mean,
it makes no sense at all. More like your husband saying that you want your daughter to get a boob job so her boobs are as big as yours.
Because, honey, I love your breasts, and I would like for a 9-year-old to have the same enormous rack that you do, so I'm going to get that taken care of later on today. I mean, and by the way, let's just, and I don't mean disrespect to any group of people in particular, but let's be honest, when they say religious traditions or cultures, that's just a code for the word superstition. That's all that is.
Yeah.
Religious cultures and traditions, however harmful or innocuous, are superstitions. So the idea that you're taking wax off of a guy's penis, that sounded like something other than what I meant. If I had like several things that I didn't mean, but the idea that you're just sitting there with like a fish scaler or whatever, just taking off bits of a kid's penis because, because an invisible person, because the great Gazoo told you to do it, that just seems like a bad idea.
Well, the Bay Area Intactivist group calls the procedure male genital mutilation and likens it to cutting female genitals. They do have to get 7,168 signatures by April of next year to get this on the November 2011 ballot. There have been similar measures in other parts of the country, including a failed effort in Massachusetts earlier this year. The intactivists, I just can't say that enough, say that circumcisions are not medically necessary and violate the child's body, that it requires a medical procedure which carries risk of complications and pain, and that foreskins are part of the natural body to help protect the penis. Proponents of circumcision say that it can reduce the risk of penile cancer, which is a rare disease. It's part of traditional religious practices in Jewish and Muslim faiths, and men who are circumcised are less likely to get sexually transmitted infections such as genital herpes and human papillomavirus.
But, when you read these studies, so many of these things come out of the fact that, like, if you just don't teach your kid to wash, he's going to have trouble in all different areas. Look, teach him what the soap is, and you're going to minimize a lot of it. Or, to wear a rubber. How about that? You just teach your kid to wear a rubber. Problem. That solves, like, 99% of the problems we got in this stupid country. Rubbers are the answer to everything, by the way. So,
Dr. Michael Brady, a professor of pediatrics at the Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio, said that, yes, you can develop swelling and tenderness if the foreskin is not properly cared for. He said there are numbers of patients who had no clue what had to be done because they didn't handle their foreskin correctly and they ended up getting adhesion. But he added, that by itself is not reason to circumcise an infant.
Well, you just don't. I mean, it is part of the Hippocratic Oath. You just don't go lopping off parts of your body that don't have anything wrong with them. I mean, unless, you know, certainly unless a person's an adult and they sort of opt in to that sort of a thing. So, all right. At the same time, I mean, it's not like a thing I can get all that worked up about because I don't have kids and whatever. I mean, I was, you know, I don't know how old you are when you get this done. If you're a male, I mean, it's, what is it, like when you're a few weeks old, maybe?
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever. So I was, you know, so it was 36.9 years ago or something. But, you know, it just seems like one of those, it just seems like a vestige of some earlier, like totally unenlightened era that we've just dragged behind us like a bad trailer hooked to your truck.
On the other hand, though, support groups for men who sit around and
lament their lost foreskin.
Yes, that's just equally crazy.
It's just retarded is what that is.
Yeah.
That's just dumb. You know, it's like that. And then they have that thing where you can, like, they do like the Jim Rose circus lifto thing where it's like they put hooks in your penis and then they dangle weights from it. I'm not making this up. And they do it like in a doctor's office over the course of a few months so you can get, you know, move on, friend.
Oh, by the way, on the subject of penises, somebody sent me a link to this. Yes. And I actually linked to it on my Facebook page. So if you go to the Dawn Taylor Facebook page, there's an iPhone app that apparently helps you with self-hypnosis techniques to make your penis larger.
That seems reputable. Good to hear that iPhone, that iPhone standards and practices department is really staying up, burning the midnight oil, deciding what is and what isn't a scam that they can put in the store.
Yeah, they're really screening those well, I see.
Jesus. All right, there's your penis watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a melting away. Bow, bow, bow. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Somebody says, Rick, Jim Roop grinning and drunk, two-fisting booze at one of your listener parties is one of my fondest memories from your program. God bless the two-fisting Jim Roop. That really is true. And I know the listener party you're talking about, and there are photos of this. Here's the greatest moment from that party, which Susan Reynolds and I witnessed, which we just bonded over just for years afterward, just recalling this moment. We were at Barracuda, which is... You've been to Barracuda, probably.
No,
okay.
Never.
Yeah, so it's, you know, but it's, you know, it's just, it's like a big, you know, it's, you know, it's like a big club where there's, you know, they do rock shows, or they did at one point, and there's, you know, dancing. It's a big dance floor, and there's a stage. And then there's a green room, but the green room is downstairs. So you, when you walk off stage, you take a right, and then you are at the top of the stairs, and you can see all the way down to the bottom. It's a straight shot, so you can see to the bottom of the stairs. And then down there are the dressing rooms, and, you know, there's like a little bar or whatever. And so Susan Reynolds and I, we're working this listener party, and Jim was our mystery guest. We had unveiled him as the surprise guest. And he was Jim's man who likes his tipple, as they say. And he was just he was just unbelievably drunk, but still able to function. Like, he is the definition of a functioning drinker. I'm not even going to say functioning alcoholic, because I get the feeling he can take it or leave it. He just takes it all the time.
Is he one of those madmen type guys?
Yes.
He's
like a Roger Sterling, where he's just loaded all the time, but like it doesn't really matter. Like, he's like that episode of WKRP where Johnny's reflexes on the drunk test get better the more he drinks. The guy goes, hit the bell, bing, and he hits it like immediately, and he's saying the alphabet backward and forward and skipping letters. And anyway, so we're standing at the top of this, and Jim has been drinking all night because, of course, listeners are just, Jim Roop, have a beer! You know, and it's like he couldn't drink it fast enough because listeners were like filling his hands as fast as he could mainline the stuff. Anyway, so Jim is just like... He's just plowed, and he's inside, but he's wearing these awesome Ray-Ban sunglasses the whole night because he's fantastic. And at Barracuda, they have at one point they had a sort of like South Pacific kind of decorative theme where it was like a lot of bamboo and like a low rent Trader Vic's kind of a thing going on. It was a lot of like Polynesian colors and whatever. So Susan Reynolds and I, about 2 hours into the party, are standing at the top of the stairs that lead down to the green room, and we're just talking, and then we catch something in our peripheral vision, and we look down at the bottom of the stairs, and Jim Roop is at the bottom of the stairs. Now, we don't know who he was talking to. They were out of sight, but he had his sunglasses on indoors at, like, midnight, by the way, had his sunglasses on, and then he was holding this huge piece of bamboo up to his mouth like a kazoo and just going, and then giggling insanely, and then high-fiving somebody who was just on the other side of our vision. All we could see was another hand coming up. And he would just, like, lean back and go, with this bamboo, and it was, like, 5 feet long. And then he would high-five this disembodied hand that we saw, and then he would giggle, and then he would fall out of sight for a while. It was just one of the best. I have no idea what was going on. To this day, I don't know why that was happening or to whom he was doing it. I have no idea. Just one of the great moments of my life. There you go. Great moments in Emerson history. This is all true. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. You know, Jim Roop, he's calling from Los Angeles when he calls us. That's that 323, that's in Los Angeles, where you lived, Dawn.
I did.
You lived near West Hollywood, is that true? Or am I just imagining that's where you'd live?
I lived in Hollywood proper.
All right. So did you live in a neighborhood that was, you didn't live in a fabulous neighborhood, did you?
No, I lived near Fountain and Cahuenga. I lived sort of in between the areas where the hookers were.
Okay. I don't even know where I was going with that. I will say that Los Angeles, though, is there's always that thing that we heard this in high school about breakdancing. There was this this statement that you would hear all the time, which is that anything that starts in Los Angeles and New York takes like 2 years to get to the rest of the country, because that's where most of the, you know, trends and styles and fads and fashions or whatever originate. And in some ways it's true, in some ways it's not. I will tell you this. You go to Los Angeles, less so New York, but you go to Los Angeles and you really dig, you get a good idea of what the American language makeup is going to look like, you know, in 5 or 10 years. And you go to Los Angeles and it's not like you have to speak Spanish, you know, to make your way in that city. Now, there are places where it certainly helps. And there are places where it becomes a lot more difficult to do things if the only language you speak is English. And you find yourself doing a lot of pointing, maybe a little bit of shouting, and then getting your mime on as you're trying to do something. And when you speak Spanish, life just becomes a little bit easier in a lot of places. Now, the world is becoming more and more that way, and you know, and it's also just it's just good for your brain, especially if you spend a lot of time abusing it with free scotch from listeners and blowing into a tube for reasons nobody really understands. You know, speak a little Spanish, you know, as you do that, your brain literally, I mean, it's not figuratively, your brain literally develops, you know, those new those new folds, the wrinkles in your brain where you are gathering new pieces of information and you're learning things in a different way, and you're going to learn it in a different way than you did in high school too. You go to Castalia Language Center, you can find out more about them at portlandspanish.com. You know, they don't just have you memorize stuff and then read it back to them, because that's, I mean, this sounds like an obvious pedantic point, but that's not learning. That's just memorizing something and reading it back without context. It is not really the same thing at all. When you actually learn and you internalize a language, you're actually going to be able to speak it conversationally, which is, of course, the upshot. That's what you want. So you find out more by going to portlandspanish.com. But it's portlandspanish.com. The class sizes are small, and, of course, the schedule is flexible. They can find something that works for you and then find something that works well with the rest of your life. So whatever day or time is best for you, they're going to be able to function with that. And it's portlandspanish.com. Portlandspanish.com. It's where you find out more about Castalia Language Center. That is Castalia Language Center, a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson radio program. Please tell me you heard it here, won't you please?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
What's the name of that kid in Pulp Fiction, anyway?
From the Emerson News Network. This is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Dawn Taylor. It's one of the most contested lines in the movies. In Quentin Tarantino's 1994 film Pulp Fiction, hitmen Jules and Vincent, at the behest of their boss, Marcellus Wallace, visit an apartment where a group of young men are hiding out with Marcellus's briefcase. After asking one of the fellows for a bite of his tasty burger, Jules asked if he knows why the French call a quarter pounder a royale with cheese. The young man says, because of the metric system? To which Jules replies, check out the big brain on Brad. Or, perhaps, check out the big brain on Brett. Which is correct? Let's take a listen and hear what Jules says.
Check out the big brain on Brad!
Well, the character's name, both in the script and in another mention in the final film, is Brett. If you scout around on the internet, you'll run across a number of claims that the line was a flub, a mistake. Actor Samuel L. Jackson accidentally says Brad instead of Brett, and that it was left in the movie. Other people believe that he calls Brett Brad as a deliberate insult, although that seems awfully subtle for a writer like Tarantino. What's most likely is that Sam Jackson actually does say Brett, but the way he draws it out, it makes it sound like he's saying Brad. Listen again. You can just barely hear him hit the T sound at the end of the word, although it's difficult to distinguish.
Check out the big brain on Brad.
So does Jackson actually say Brad or Brett? Perhaps the only way to know for sure is to ask Samuel L. Jackson himself. But the character's name was Brett, at least for the very short amount of time he had left before Jules struck down upon him with great vengeance and furious anger.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
Indeed. By the way, to answer the question that just came in via email, that is Rose Tattoo. You know Rose Tattoo, by the way, is the artist who originally did the song Nice Boys, is covered by Guns N' Roses on the Live EP. So there you go. That's Rock and Roll Outlaw from the album of the same name. Here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Made possible. We were just actually just talking a few minutes ago about the Jim Roop and CNN, the music licensing and the whatnot and the hey-hey and the Mahoygan. And, you know, it's a... It's a complicated thing, this passel of genius that we provide to you every day. But it's made exponentially easier by folks like yourself and, of course, business partners such as Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com. That is SquiresElectric.com. Or you can also call them if you want. It's 503-252-1688. 09, as you get ready to go into the holiday season, I will simply say that you're going to find yourself dealing with any number of situations in which power has to come from, I don't know, Zeus or somebody, into a substation, and then, you know, through a series of wires slash tubes, and sometimes wires inside of tubes, sometimes tubes that look like wires, then into your home where it just resides inside a wall. I was watching something the other day, actually, about the, it was something about the stock market crash of 1929, and they were talking about how it was an age of prosperity and seemingly limitless invention, and how electricity was actually such a brand new product for most homes that stores actually did a brisk business selling, I kid you not, plugs that you would put in the outlet to keep the electricity from leaking onto your floor when you weren't using it to power your Victrola. So my understanding of electricity... Really? Do you have one of the...
I have one of those.
Usually it's just to keep toddlers from jamming forks into the wall. This was just to keep the power from dribbling onto the carpet.
No, I'm terrified that the electricity will all just leak out of the wall and that I'll be wasting it.
And stealthily attack you while you sleep like
a
gnome.
And my dog will like lick it up off the floor like antifreeze.
Bella!
And then she'll glow in the dark.
Hey, I have a question for you about antifreeze, Don.
Yeah.
Why do they make antifreeze good tasting in the first place? It seems like the answer would be to make it so it tastes terrible.
I have no idea.
Okay. In any event, my understanding of electricity is only slightly removed from the, you know, the plugging at the holes that doesn't fall onto your shag carpeting. If you find yourself in the same situation, or if you simply don't have a lot of time, you don't have a lot of, you know, a lot of free moments in the day because you're busy, you know, or if you just decided, look, hey, your days of sitting there and being that guy where you're trying to strip a wire with your teeth because you can't find your good toolbox, you know, are over and behind you, contact Squires Electric. 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. That's electrical wiring, a wiring of any kind, be it Ethernet, be it an office intercom system, be it something you haven't thought about or used until the day that it didn't work anymore and you got to get it fixed or repaired. You can get it maintained, you can get it fixed, you can get it installed. Anything from the very beginning of its life to the end of its life, the wiring can be put in, maintained, and serviced by Squires Electric. 503-252-1609.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, then. Getting your funk on over there?
I'm doing a little dance.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Messages still coming in for Jim Roop. Some of them say, Roop, all caps. What's good, playa? I don't know. I'll inquire about the goodness of the various aspects of that playa's life.
Where's Jim Roop's bitches?
I don't know. There should be. They should do like some sort of BET should do like some sort of a spinoff called like This American Playa, This American Pimp, This American. Now I'm where I'm going with that. Let's see. I lolled when Roop blew on that thing. By the way, that was effing awesome. It was the best night ever. All right, so it was a many splendid evening. Coming up later on in today's program, we got your Taser Watch. We got another installment of the greatest songs ever made. And Don Taylor has more news. Ooh, wait, that's happening right now on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A small town in northern India has banned all the single ladies from carrying telephones because they keep using them in the service of illicit ends, like marriage. According to the American Foreign Press, at least 23 couples in the state of Uttar Pradesh have run away and married someone outside their caste after connecting on their cell phones. All parents were told to ensure their unmarried daughters do not use cell phones, a spokesman for the village assembly said. The boys can do so, but only under their parents' monitoring. Most of Minnesota's thousands of Somali immigrants made the journey from East Africa to the middle of America to escape violence, so members of the immigrant community in Minneapolis are shocked by allegations that dozens of Somalis have been operating a brutal sex trafficking ring in which girls as young as 12 were prostituted for drugs and cash. According to court documents, the Somali outlaws and Somali mafia gangs have pimped out girls in apartments, motel rooms, and shopping center bathrooms in Minnesota and Tennessee for a decade, using threats and abuse to keep them in line.
I wonder if Italian organized crime members are upset that mafia has been co-opted, that it's sort of, it's like, you know, that it's like Xerox or Google or something, that it's just become, you know, you know, the Somalis have just come in and they've just appropriated the word without paying any kind of royalty on it.
They've diluted the brand.
That's right.
Really.
It seems like the intellectual property of the word mafia ought to reside with La Cosa Nostra.
Well, according to the New York Times, the allegations were a deep shock for the tens of thousands of Somalis in the Minneapolis area who fled civil war and famine to build new lives in the United States and now wonder how some of their youths could have strayed so far.
When is the last time you heard about Somalis doing something really good? I mean, really. I'm not saying they only do bad things, but I'm saying when is the last time you picked up the paper and go, hey, have you seen this great thing that the Somalia's doing? Like, never. So,
well, I think we only hear about the bad Somali stuff because it's stuff that's being perpetrated on these kinds of people who are fleeing in droves to come here and go to Minneapolis and thinking, yeah, life will be better. And it turns out they're ne'er-do-well.
One bad pomegranate sons. Doesn't spoil the whole bunch, Don.
It might.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor.
A school in Seminole County, Florida, has banned just about everything associated with Christmas.
I'm sorry, where?
Florida. School board policy indicates employees must be neutral when it comes to religion, and while schools can celebrate some aspects of the holidays, it can't observe or promote holidays as religious events. But some parents said new guidelines at Heathrow Elementary are a bit extreme. One parent said classrooms can't show Santa Claus or use traditional Christmas colors. You can't use red and green, a parent said. It's ridiculous. But some religious leaders said the season should be about teaching kids diversity. Congregation Beth Am Rabbi Rick Sherwin said, are we singing Come All Ye Faithful or Frosty the Snowman? There's a line between religious and cultural, if you will.
Well, and I would almost dispute that. I would say that Christmas has become, for all intents and purposes, an entirely secular holiday. Christmas has so little to do, and I'm not saying this is a knock on religion, it's just a fact, that Christmas has become a celebration of, or at least a celebration represented by, well, we were talking about this yesterday, about you said that you don't really care for people or parties or gatherings, but you love a lot of the aesthetic and the trappings of Christmas, the accoutrements that go along with the holiday. I don't even know if it's accoutrements or accoutrement. I don't even know which one is correct anymore. It's one of those made up.
No, I think if you speak English, it's actually accoutrements.
But is accoutrement even is that an actual alternate pronunciation?
Well, yeah, because I think it is originally a French word.
Or is it like a fake thing, like forte?
No, I think if you say it in French, it's accoutrement.
Okay, is it really foyer in French?
It would be if it was actually a word in French. I don't know if it is.
See, I always just suspected that. You know what it is? I always suspect that that's an idiot American trying to sound cultured by adding some fake-ass pronunciation to a thing that doesn't really deserve it. Mm. Whatever. But Christmas has become a holiday that is made up of a whole lot of things that have very little to do with, the birth of Jesus, which, by the way, actually took place in, like, May. I mean, just for those of you who are, paying attention to your calendars. I really do – I am – as much as I'm not with the whole, things were better when I was a kid, I am glad, and not just because I went to a Catholic school, that, I did come from an era when you were allowed to celebrate Christmas in school. Because it's like there's no kid anywhere that is celebrating Christmas and really just, being all Jesus-y about it, unless you're some homeschooled freak, in which case, it doesn't really matter because who you're interacting with then, just your freak parents. No disrespect, Andy. But he's the exception, right? Because he was homeschooled because his parents felt like the school wasn't really giving him the right nut, that he wasn't learning enough. And when they weren't doing it so they could turn him into like a Rod and Todd. They were just doing it because they wanted him to learn at a more accelerated rate than they felt the public schools were doing. But if you're at school, if you're 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, all you really care about is, let's say it all together now, the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip. Jesus Schmizus. I mean, he's just, he's kind of incidental to the entire thing. The only people who really care about, and again, I don't mean to be disrespectful. I'm just saying the only people who really focus on Jesus during the holidays are religious leaders, people over the age of, 30, and Jack Webb. In that one episode where it turns out that the little boy has Jesus because he wanted to give him some hot chocolate at home.
I do really like the phrase Jesus Schmizus.
Yeah.
There's something there.
Yeah. Can I just tell you that I was trying to do a whole Jesus of Nazareth joke at Lara's party the other day. It didn't really work because she'd just gotten back from from traveling all over Europe and Asia, and then she had gotten a variety of cheeses that were meant to represent the various places to which she'd gone. And I tried so hard to work in a Jesus of Nazareth, and it just didn't. I came within like a hair's breadth of making it happen. It didn't really come together for me. All right.
Let's do our Taser Watch.
Here's your Taser Watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Don't taste me, bro!
is Dawn Taylor with your Taser Watch.
Homemade stun guns, crudely built from disposable cameras using instructions from the internet, have hit the streets of Sydney, Australia.
That is awesome. That means they've hit the streets of, like, the world and everywhere. I could get one today.
The cameras provide parts and the voltage necessary to create a powerful taser-like effect. Two screws protruding from the body of the camera conduct the charge, which is fired by pressing the button on the camera as if taking a picture. While not lethal, the weapon has a higher voltage than a household PowerPoint and can be modified to increase voltage.
Wonderful.
The more powerful the camera flash, the stronger the electrical charge will be. The Daily Telegraph was able to easily obtain one of these devices from a 16-year-old private school student from Sydney's eastern suburbs who said he carried the device for protection.
Kids have always got the cool stuff.
New South Wales police have warned the devices are illegal. The device could be classified as a prohibited weapon, and police warn that anyone caught using one could face tough penalties, including jail.
So it's not lethal, but it's more... It's more voltage than, like, would come out of the wall socket, you're saying? What does it do? You may have said this. Does it compare it to, like, a regular taser?
I'm not sure. It doesn't say. But there was a 24-year-old man was charged with using one to attack two high school students on November 11th.
So it's not so much a taser as it is a stun gun.
Yeah, it's a stun gun.
Okay. So it doesn't – we haven't gotten yet to the prong throwing stage of the device's development.
And I couldn't – this is one of those weird photos where it wouldn't, like, right-click and copy, so I couldn't send it. But I will turn this around to show it to you. Apparently, that's what it looks like. It's a disposable camera that's been stripped down and has a couple of screws sticking out one end.
Wow. It seems it sort of boggles my mind that it took us this long to get that, because it seems like you could probably have made that 20 years ago. It really is just like a camera you get at Walgreens for $10.
Yeah.
That just has a bunch of drywall screws jabbing out of one end.
Yeah.
Seems like you could probably harm a guy with that, whether or not the electrical portion of it actually operated properly. That's give a guy a good gouging with that.
You could.
That's fantastic. All right, there you go. That is it's the march of human progress, Dawn, and technology. Mm-hmm. That's your Taser Watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program. Awesome. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio program. Let's see. Somebody asks, hey, I heard you play that Rose Tattoo song earlier. Wasn't the guy from Rose Tattoo Master from Master Blaster and Beyond Thunderdome? Yes. Yes, you are correct, sir. The big bald-headed guy. His name is, I don't know what his actual birth name is. I know that his name in Rose Tattoo is Angry Anderson. Rose Tattoo is like the best band that nobody's ever heard of. If you were to pick a band to represent you, like in a bar fight, Rose Tattoo would be the band that you would want.
You wouldn't want U2, for example.
No. Or Bob Geldof. You wouldn't want him either.
Or Green Day. There's an awful lot of bands that I can think of and just go, you know, they would just get their asses kicked.
Coldplay. They'd be the weakest band. They'd be the first to go.
Yeah.
Nickelback.
John Mayer would not be able to, like, get your back in a fight.
Kings of Leon. I know that there are whipping boys anyway, but it's also true. Hey, by the way, can I just tell you this? Did you know that they still publish Rolling Stone magazine?
I think I knew that in that every once in a while I see it on the stand at 7-Eleven, but there's never anything on the cover that makes me want to buy it.
I looked at it yesterday. I was at the Plaid Pantry, and I was like, and it catches me off guard every month that it's still there. Well, it's Eminem, and he's got this whole weird, like, Lord of the Sith thing going on where he's got, you know, it's like the hoodie or whatever, and it's brought forward on his face. And I actually stopped, and it was the weirdest flashback. Because, I mean, I love Eminem and all, but it's, you know...
Like, is it 15 years ago?
Yeah, it just seemed really weird. It was like a Rolling Stone magazine with Eminem on the front, and it was like the Rolling Stone interview, which is a thing that, you know, like Jan Wenner still puts on the front, as though we're all waiting for it. Sitting around going, oh, any day now, Rolling Stone will do the interview with Eminem.
That used to mean something.
Yeah, it was just very weird. And that, you know, and even more surprising is the fact that not just that they have Rolling Stone, but that they have Spin.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I actually saw a Spin magazine on the newsstand. I was looking for a magazine just last week, and I had thought about that. I was going to come into the studio and just go, do you know they still publish Spin?
It just boggles my mind that there is anybody out there. That's got to be a thing that is a loss leader, or there's some tax write-off being used, you know, there. That's got to be the magazine is kept around like as a deliberately money-losing property, just so they can not have to pay capital gains or something.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who reads it. I haven't heard of anyone reading it. Articles from it are never quoted or linked to on the internet in any way.
No, it's because they're never good.
I don't think anyone, unless you, there may be some 13-year-olds who pick it up because they'll read anything that has, you know, bands on the cover. But I don't think anyone actually reads it.
My guess would be that 85% of the spin magazines that are manufactured go to the home of aging hipsters, you know, who subscribed to it once upon a time and then just forgot to cancel it. Mm. And then it just keeps showing up. And then they pick it up out of the mailbox or whatever, and they look at it, they glance through, they go back to the record review section, they skip past all the new music, which they probably don't listen to, and they go right to the re-release section to see if, like, a Toad the Wet Sprocket box set has come out. And then when it hasn't, then they put it down and they forget about it until they throw it away or put it in the recycle bin at the end of the month.
I've mentioned before that because I buy makeup from Elf, from Eyes, Lip, Face, Elf Cosmetics, they have this thing where when you're ordering something, it's like, hey, would you like a free subscription to a magazine? And I'll say, sure, okay, which then I forget about it. And then next thing I know, I'm getting like Latina. And so the last one was Vogue. And for like the better part of a year now, I have been getting copies of Vogue magazine, which has it's all clothes for like skinny rich people, and it has nothing to do with my life at all. And there's nothing.
Why did you pick Vogue?
I don't think I picked it. I think it was.
Is
just
it the
like
default choice? Like, is that like a record club where if you don't pick something, they just send you the Carpenter's box set?
Well, I think it just said, "Do you want a free subscription to Vogue?" And I said, "Free crap, okay." And I checked the box, and then I forgot about it. So, but yeah, and it keeps coming, and like, oh my god! Like a few months ago, I got like the wedding issue, and it weighed like 14 pounds.
Oh, that's all, and it's all ads, right?
7,000 pages, and it was all ads.
Yeah.
And this thing, every time it comes, there's like no room for anything else in my mailbox. So I finally got one day before yesterday that has the big thing on it that says, "This will be your last issue."
Of course.
And all I could think was, "Oh, thank God."
Well, but the thing is, you'll never get away because they do that thing. I was talking to somebody actually not too long ago who subscribed to like one of those, like Rolling Stone or one of those damn magazines. And they basically now pay her to take it. I mean, they do everything but give her like $10 and like a massage or something just to renew her subscription, because that's their whole thing, is they're making money on selling the print ads inside it, which itself like boggles the imagination.
Yeah. And the cost of print ads and the ability to sell print ads is predicated on how many
subscribers you have to the magazine.
Right. So if there's a magazine you really, really like, you can go on eBay and actually do a search for the magazine, and you will find people who sell magazine subscriptions in bulk. And you can often find really super cheap subscriptions to magazines, because it's basically just huge packages of subscriptions that people are reselling that the magazine is happy to give away at almost nothing, because they don't really make money off the subscriptions. They make money off of the ads.
This makes me wonder now, how is this affected? And this sounds like a laugh line, but it really is. This makes me wonder how the publisher's clearinghouse thing has been affected. Because did you ever actually fill out, when I was a kid, I was fascinated by the publisher's clearinghouse thing.
Oh, me too.
Not just because of the cardboard check. It was because you got the sheet of stamps that represented, God, we're old.
And you'd tear out the magazines that you wanted, and then you'd lick them, and you had to stick them in the little boxes.
And you would just, and that was the thing, and I would look through. When I was a kid, it's no wonder my dad thought I was gay. I was just fascinated with things that were, I was going to say pretty, but that's not even the right way to put it. It was like a specific kind. Mm-hmm. Maybe a specific kind of pretty. I don't know. But it was like the publisher's clearinghouse stamps were fascinating to me. It was these big sheets. I thought stamps were pretty cool anyway,
yeah,
for reasons I can't really explain. But it was like big sheets of stamps that you would, and each one represented a magazine like Harper's Bazaar, Family Circle, Red Book. And then you would tear them off, and then I guess you would put them
on the
little boxes or something.
And they put like three
holes
three
on the
boxes.
Back.
Well, also, they had three boxes. Mainly because they wanted to encourage you psychologically to get three subscriptions. So if you only chose one magazine, you had two empty boxes.
And they could tell by looking at the back of the envelope, because the envelope had holes in the back.
Right. And they did that. I saw a woman talking about subscriptions years ago, and that was a psychological thing, too, where they couldn't legally make you buy anything to enter the sweepstakes.
Right.
But they put those holes in the back so that you can see through the envelope if you were subscribing to a magazine or not. And that was purely to make you think that they would dump your envelope if you weren't buying magazines.
Which they couldn't, because that would be illegal.
Right.
Interesting. Well, you know, that's like the thing with it's interesting how this stuff works, because, you know, that was the deal with Reader's Digest. They haven't done this for a long, long time. Reader's Digest back in the 60s, like 5960 one. They did this really, really savvy thing. Whoever came up with this got a promotion, probably. They would just send you a penny with your resubscription card. People go, well, they sent me a penny. I guess I better subscribe. Because it was like psychologically like you'd been guilted into it because they gave you a penny.
Well, it was the same thing with, I don't think it was March of Dimes, but one of the big nonprofit groups that collects money at Christmas time, and they'll send you like the little thing of return address labels with your name and address and stuff on it, with a little snow scene with people like in a sleigh or something. And it's that same thing: is that psychologically, people feel like if you have been given something, then you feel beholden to them, and now you feel like you're more likely to actually send them the money now.
Sons of bitches! Somebody notes here: sometimes they would have a Playboy stamp. That is the case, and it would be that was quite exciting. That was titillating to a young lad. You see the Playboy stamp, and I don't think there was ever a Penthouse stamp. That was the line they didn't cross. There was Playboy. So I wonder about the Publishers Clearinghouse folks and what they're really, how they're reacting to this right now. Here's another thing I wonder about, and this is sort of the confluence. These are all of a piece to me. The Rolling Stone, Spin, Vogue, Publishers Clearinghouse. I wonder about record and tape clubs. Like, do they still exist? Does the RCA or the Columbia Record and Tape Club, is it still around? Do they still do it? Have they moved the operation to, like, overseas or to specific sections of America, like communities where maybe they don't have a lot of internet access going on?
I know there are still DVD and I think still CD clubs. I know my friend Eric D. Snyder is a member of the Disney DVD club, and he does it mainly so he can get a good price on, like, Disney DVDs.
Now, the
and
DVD
stuff.
I can see, though, because even if you're, like, if you're watching the movie online or whatever, you don't always get the extras. You don't get the commentary sometimes or the, you don't, like, a lot of times get the bonus features.
Yeah.
But it's like there's not really a bonus feature with most, with most CDs or whatever. So it's like, what would be, if you got iTunes or whatever, like, what would possibly be the point of the Columbia Record Club? And I am calling it the Columbia Record and Tape Club. But you wonder if that's still around. I saw this documentary one time. I forget what it's called. It was one of those documentaries that is frustrating because the title had nothing to do. The title was like from a Dead Milkman song or some crap. So it's like there was no way to ever, you can never link the title with the actual content. But it was a documentary made by a guy who worked there at the Columbia Record and Tape Club. And it was made in like 97, 98. And it was sort of like kind of a post-Reality Bites kind of a thing. And so he was just, like that crazy Gen X slacker who films everything. And he just like walked around with a camcorder just filming his daily life at the Record and Tape Club, which they never stopped him because they just thought it was like his quirky, it's his quirky, edgy 20-something, personality trait. And so he just filmed months and months and months of working in there, and then he made it into a documentary showing exactly how that club operates. It was fascinating.
I think pretty much every kid ever, managed to like join the Columbia
yes.
Record Club at some point until your parents like made you stop.
Yeah.
But and I remember my biggest memory of that though is they had the thing where they would, if you didn't send back the thing, they would send you the record anyway, and then you would be stuck with this record because you're supposed
Anne
to like,
Marie,
pack
it. Greatest Hits album or something.
Well, the thing is, I of course it was doing the rock themed one,
sure.
And I always remember when the record that I failed to tell them I didn't want was Thin Lizzy, and it came, and I looked at it, and it was just like, God,
more crap.
I hate these hair bands. I'm not going to listen to this. Like, and then I never sent it back. So then one day, finally, I just went, what the hell?
There's nothing else to listen to.
And I cracked it up and listened to it and was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Why did I not know that Thin Lizzy was so awesome?
Good for you. Somewhere David Walker is smiling. Well done. I didn't belong. I never belonged to the Columbia Record and Tape Club because that was too expensive. That was for rich folk. We working class people, we subscribed to the RCA Record and Tape Club. Which was way, way worse. It was terrible because like you wouldn't get nearly as many things. Like you could maybe get like four or something instead of eight. Also, the selections were crap. It would be like I would be like I'm into rock, and so the selections it would offer me were like Mr. The Fix, and I would just sit there and I would look at it. There's nothing good here. Because all of the cool stuff was over at the Columbia Record and Tape Club. They'd like locked it all up. And then on the rare occasion that you did buy something, I bought the Love and Every Minute of It album by Loverboy, which is dreadful, by the way, if you're wondering. And it sounds exactly, what I didn't realize at the time is that was like an early prototype. It was a Mutt Lange album. And it was like a bunch of, we've talked about how Mutt Lange Records, it's like everything he wrote for Def Leppard then became a Shania Twain song. I found out later that like everything he wrote for Loverboy became a Def Leppard song. So that was like the embryonic stage of all that. But the thing with the RCA Record and Tape Club is there were no liner notes. you'd get you to get the cassette, because I wasn't going to get vinyl. That was for old people. So I'd get the cassette, you take it out, and it doesn't even unfold. It's just like a piece. It's like you got it at, it's like you got it at the Compton swap meet. It was like, on the inside, it's just blank. It's just like a piece of white paper. And you're like, well, where's the... And there's nothing. There were no notes of any kind. And then, just to mark you as like, you know, as like the poor kid, it actually said on it like, RCA Record and Tape Club, like in huge letters. And everybody at my school knew that that was for like... You know, that wasn't for Stan Marsh. That was for Kenny. You know, and so I would like try to like rub it off with a pencil eraser, which never worked.
Yeah, your all of your cassettes came from RCA Record Club, and you're wearing the Tough Skins jeans.
I was just gonna say it was like being dressed in solely in Kmart clothing. Here in just a moment, speaking of music, actually, in just a moment, we will do another installment of the greatest songs ever made. Don't forget, coming up today at 4 p.m. Pacific time over at Cascadia.fm, you can hear Don Taylor and Bobby Roberts hosting Ham-Fisted Radio. What's on today's program, Don?
Not a clue.
Okay.
We'll probably talk about how cold it is. And
really?
As usual, we will take suggestions from listeners as to what we should chat about. So if you come in and drop us a line in the chat box and say, what about, ask us a question, we'll answer it.
Remember when it was hot? Now it's so cold.
Yeah.
Okay. So
it'll be really entertaining, though.
Find that at hamfistedradio.com later on, or live at 4 p.m. Pacific time at Cascadia.fm. Let's do one more here. We'll take a break. We'll come back with greatest songs ever on the other side.
Well, it is National Opt-Out Day.
That's today, isn't it?
That is today.
I keep thinking it's tomorrow, but tomorrow's the actual holiday. Today's opt-out day. Okay, all right.
Holiday. Across the country, airline officials are waiting nervously to see whether the people they've taken to calling a few privacy-obsessed individuals will succeed in snarling air traffic on the busiest travel day of the year.
Fingers crossed.
If there are enough of these people who have vowed to opt for a pat-down if they're asked to go through one of the nation's 70 backscatter X-ray machines, they have the potential to create hour-long delays. The scan takes at most 35 seconds, including the time required to process the image. The full body pat-down takes 2 minutes, more if the passenger is yelling at the TSA officer. This passenger will be flying with his wife and their baby from Atlanta to Minneapolis. He says he's more concerned about the weather than airport security screenings.
This is travel?
Yes.
We got an earlier flight.
Just to
try to avoid any travel delays once we get in. We have a two-hour drive, so just extra time.
This passenger is flying with her husband and their baby, I think it's the wife of the same guy. She's asked if she'll opt for a body scan or pat down at the airport security checkpoints.
With the little one, I think we'll probably end up doing a pat down, but I don't know. It just depends when we get in there, but I'm not really concerned about it.
That's an interesting question. At what age do they start searching children? Do they search, if you got a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes, do they search the kids, the babies?
You could be hiding all kinds of stuff in there.
Seriously, I mean... Because if you, like, I was thinking about this, I was at the goddamn post office yesterday. I have a problem with the post office itself. We have many mail carriers who listen to the show, and it's, you know, it's not that. As you know, it's always the clientele. Behind that woman, I put up a thing on Facebook where that was behind the woman who was like, the guy's like, so do you need any stamps today? And the answer, by the way, is no. That's just the answer. There's no other answer to that. At the post office, and they say, do you need any stamps today? There's a machine over there that sells the stamps. You don't need the guy to sell you stamps. The answer is no. Even if you need stamps, the answer is no. You don't effing need them. So the woman says, what do you have? And he says, well, we got Christmas. We got what kind of Christmas stamps? We got Noel. We got the pine tree. And then she just says, just show me everything you've got. And it was like everybody in line kind of does that. Or you sort of you just get that like, and then there were none kind of a thing, yeah. Where you wonder if you can make some pact, you know, to just, you know, to throw her into the icy Baltic Sea. But what was my point? Blah-da-da-ba-ba-ba, post office.
Waiting in line.
But she has the baby, the whatever you call it, the thing where it's like it straps the kid to you like a bomb.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the wrong way to put it. but you know what I'm talking about. It's like a four-point restraint, and the kid is like cinched to her chest. And he's not like breastfeeding or whatever. It's just like a backpack that goes on the front. And it makes you wonder, like, well, when do they start taking the kid's clothes off? Because, goddamn, that's going to be a nightmare if they're trying to search a baby and he starts squalling like they do. I mean, it's like, I wonder if there's an answer to that, and I wonder if they would tell us. I wonder if they would tell you at what age they begin searching children. I'm really fascinated by that now because you got to figure if I can't even believe I'm saying this, if terrorists or, you know, whoever just decided that they wanted to get something through, you just figure out the cutoff age at which point they're not going to search a baby and you just stick it right in there if it's not the metal. Because the kid probably – and do they make the kid go through the X-ray thing? Like a baby? Do they make a baby go through the X-ray machine?
I have no idea.
I wonder where I could find the answers to these
things. Well, they do have a page. The TSA does have a traveling with children page. So it probably tells you, I don't know. It tells you about x-raying and walking through the metal detector and baby formula and breast milk and crap. So I don't know.
I really am curious about that. I really am. I really am wondering how they approach that.
Well, my friend, Mr. Eric D. Snyder, left yesterday or this morning, I guess, this morning to go spend Thanksgiving with his family in Salt Lake City.
Really?
And he will be traveling back through Salt Lake City, where they do have the backscatter x-rays.
When is he coming back? When will he be traveling back?
I believe he's coming back on Friday.
We should talk to him because, you know, I got to fly to Provo and back.
Yeah.
I get to fly to Provo and back in early December. So I'd like to know exactly what my experience is going to be.
Because I think he said he was going – I can't remember which he was going to opt for. I think he said he was going to opt for the X-ray because he didn't want them groping him. But I'm not sure which he'll do.
We'll find out
when he gets back which he's decided to go for.
I'll be curious. Now, the Salt Lake Airport sucks anyway. It's slow and it's inefficient and everybody's there. People in Utah are just rude and they never get – you know, the customer service doesn't even exist in that state. So.
Well, and apparently with this Western the whole blizzard snowstorm thing that's going on, too. He told me that the forecast was something like 17 degrees with a low of -7 or something.
Yeah.
It's apparently just insane.
No, the snow is
right now.
Yeah, and the snow is they're expecting a 6-hour blizzard or something. That's just going to be dumping buckets and buckets of snow. So the good news is that maybe I won't if the snow just if it snows a lot and then if it just stays cold enough or maybe even snows more, then there's always that hope as I'm sitting on the tarmac that's that the guy would
ladies and gentlemen, it looks like SLC is, it's all sucked in, so, passengers going to Salt Lake, you're going to have to, be diverted back to PDX, and, I'll try to get you folks taken care of, and, get your voucher for your next flight, but, everybody going on to Orlando, the skies are clear up ahead, but once again, Salt Lake passengers, you will, not be able to go to Salt Lake, thank you for flying.
And you just feel like the weight lift off as your horrible trip has been canceled.
Well, and Eric did say, and as much as Eric really likes his family, and he does, he actually is one of those people who actually loves and gets along with his family, when he heard how cold it was going to be, he told me he was actually hoping it would snow here and they would close the airport.
Utah,
so he didn't have to go.
That place is – when it gets cold in Utah, it is butt-clenchingly cold. Let's have no doubt about that. By the way, many people want you to know that when I was in the CD club, I ordered lots of Accept and Dio and lots of Thin Lizzy. Says this guy.
That's
so
nice.
In that, that voice, exactly. All right, there you go. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We have one more cut from this in this story here?
We do.
Travel 3.
TSA Administrator John Pistol says why body scanners and pat-downs are effective against terrorists.
They are very adept at designing and especially concealing non-metallic bombs that would not be picked up on a walk-through metal detector. So the regimen we have in place gives us the best possible opportunity in our multiple layers of security to detect, deter, and prevent a terrorist from blowing up a plane.
Sounds like he had a lot of dairy before he gave that soundbite. All right. Coming up here in just a moment, we'll have another installment of the greatest songs ever made. Don't forget at 4 p.m. you can hear Don Taylor over at Cascadia.fm for Ham-Fisted Radio and so forth. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
We were just talking about, somebody's noting that the other thing about the RCA Record and Tape Club, he said he remembers that there was always one song at the end that would cut off because they would just, because there was just some machine somewhere, it was just, in Singapore, just some factory that would just crank out these, and it's not like they would sit and listen back to them to make sure that, your Billy Ocean tape was really going to be, in flawless condition or something.
Yeah, plus they only bought the, I think they only got the, because I remember that too, with the cassette tapes. Sometimes they'd get the cassette tapes that were the cheapest, shortest cassette tapes they could possibly buy. And if the album was longer than 70 minutes of tape that there was on the cassette, it's we'll just put as much as will fit.
Or they would do that thing of blank tape at the end to preserve album continuity. So there was 40 minutes of dead air at the end of one side or something. Because the Ramones put one real long song on the other side. And so they had to fill up the time. See, that's another thing about the past sucks. There's nothing good about the past. All right. These observations brought to you by a series of fine business partners, including ChristmasMountainTrees.com. You can find out more about them by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. And it's just like it sounds. It's all one word. ChristmasMountainTrees.com.
Farm.com. It's a third-generation family farm, and you can find out more about it. You can see photos of it. You can see examples of what we're talking about. As I give you the high points of it, you can actually go and you can see this for yourself. First of all, it's a spectacular view, and it's one of those things where I can describe it, and then you can look at the photos, and then there's the actual experience, which surpasses all of those. You can see Mount St. Helens, you can see Mount Adams, you can see Mount Rainier from the Christmas Mountain trees from this family farm. I mean, that's just, it is a vast, expansive, collection of trees. It just goes, like, as far as the eye can see. So you go up there with your family, and you're really going to have a Christmas experience exactly the way, I don't know, say the way you remember it, but it's probably not even the way you remember it, because you probably have never really done something like this. This is just one of those things that you see in, like, some Capra-esque depiction of Christmas that was filmed 70 years ago, and it's one of those gold standards against which you measure your own Christmases, and it's difficult to match that because, again, it's a thing that resides almost exclusively in film or television or pop culture. How often do you really get, like, the great Hollywood Christmas? You know,
never.
Almost never, Dawn. That's right. But this year it's different, sister. Because
Do you promise?
Yes, because Dawn Taylor and I are actually going to be there. Now, we don't know the date yet. Now,
will you be the Bing Crosby to my Rosemary Clooney?
If I have to. I mean, really, if I'm not given any choice in the matter.
Well, you can be Danny Kaye if you want. But that means I have to be Vera Ellen.
But really, is that really the only movie I'm being given the option of choosing?
Yes.
Okay. I can't be Die Hard. I can't be the Hans Gruber to your... you know who I want you to be? I want to be Hans Gruber, and I want you to be the guy with the headset and the glasses who goes, the police have themselves an RV. I want you to be that guy.
Oh, see, I want to be the big blonde anarchist.
I want justice!
I want that.
No,
I want to be that guy.
Yeah. That guy.
I want to be that guy.
Remind me not to wear my Now I Have a Machine Gun Ho 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 shirt when we go to the
please don't wear that.
Christmas Mountain Trees. You go to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. And again, we'll let you know the date so it's, so you can see. So
you can come along.
You can be there and you can be perhaps the Holly Gennaro or the Mr. Takagi to my Hans Gruber and you're Danny Kaye. I don't even know who's who anymore in this story.
You're Hans Gruber and I'm Danny Kaye, which would be an awesome movie,
and
by
then
the
we'll
way.
Tap. I don't even know what's
and
happening.
Kill a guy.
We're not going to kill a guy. That's no. Attention to Troy and Jennifer.
No,
we're not going to kill a guy.
Mostly we'll probably just be shivering and looking at the pretty trees.
And drinking cider.
Yes, I like cider.
So you go to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. You can find out more about this. It's a family farm, but it's been there since the 1940s. It's been there, and we told the story last hour about it. The grandfather would go up to Mount Hood. He would cut down Christmas trees by hand, bring them back to Portland and sell them. And now they're on the third generation of running this farm. And it's year-round. I mean, Christmas isn't year-round, but the farm is because it's what they do. It's not a thing they do part-time. It's not a thing they do, just on the side where they buy some trees from a guy who knows a guy. This is what the farm does. They grow Christmas trees. They're beautiful. They're tall. They're, 6, 8, 10, 12 years of age. And you can feel good about that because there's always a new wave coming in. They're planting more trees every year. So it is, it's sort of nature's conveyor belt. You go up there and you're going to have a custom wagon that you can get in. You take the family. They drive through and, as it pulls you through and you can look at the stands of trees and you or your kid or your family, whoever, as a unit, you can just look and find the tree that just looks the best for you and the one that's going to fit the best in your house. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be gorgeous. You pick it out. You go back. You sit in front of a roaring fire while you watch the guy actually take the tree, cut it down, shakes the needles off, wraps it, puts it on your automobile, and then you go home and it's a fantastic. And then you go home and you got the whole thing of taking it in the house. And when they bale it, which is, wrapping it with the twine, and they don't just wrap it up with, just a bunch of ropes. So you got to be like cutting the thing with a package shark or something. They bale it in a way that you just pull the knot on the twine. It comes off and then the tree expands. Bam, and it's good to go, and it's like in the corner of your house or wherever it is you're going to put it, and there aren't like 15 pounds of excess needles or whatever. Then you get the whole thing of actually decorating it, which is awesome, and a chance for you to, maybe welcome your friend Mr. J. Daniels to the holiday party if that's how you roll, you get the smell of the tree and
every time you look at it you remember like your trip as a family to go and pick out your tree.
That's what I'm going to say, and you feel good about supporting a local family farm. And everybody talks so much about supporting farmers. This is your chance to actually do it up close and in person. So you find out more by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. It's your chance to kind of have the Christmas experience that you have always thought about. That is ChristmasMountainTrees.com. They open Friday, November 26th at 10 a.m. ChristmasMountainTrees.com, a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show. That is ChristmasMountainTrees.com.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm Rick Emerson, and these are the greatest songs ever made. What makes something a classic? Is it a matter of years, of time? Is it a matter of placement within a cultural context, a framework? Is it in comparison to earlier versions of the same theme or work? And what of that? What about variations on existing creations? When it comes to music, we are, of course, talking about the cover version, the remake, which is always a bit of a dicey proposition. At worst, a cover of a popular or well-known song makes you merely pine for the original, rendering the new attempt not only unsatisfying, but a kind of double failure, not meeting its own new standards and raising the desire for something which, by definition, it can never be, the original. Most remakes, especially those of hallowed material, fall somewhere in the middle, landing in the shadowy ground between terrible and wonderful in a sort of, it's good, I guess, but why bother kind of way. The list of recordings which exist in this category are too numerous to mention and are, by their very nature, rather forgettable. And then there are the exceptions, the rarities, those recordings which so totally stand apart from and as an accompaniment to the original that they can literally take your breath away for a moment. You stand agog, staring at the speaker or the monitor with a kind of giddy rush going through your veins, the ice-cold, wonderful sensation of hearing something perfect and improbable. So it is with today's recording. Taking a song that is deeply woven into the collective consciousness and reinventing it, the band sidesteps nearly everything that could befall such an attempt, preserving the adolescent beauty and wonder of young love while adding the majesty and sweep of experience and years. They also employ a series of musical flourishes which help to make their interpretation indelible. Check out the fraction of a second pause before the bridge. A bridge, by the way, which is suddenly awash in bell sounds from an instrument called a celesta. What's a celesta? You know it as the instrument which opens the Harry Potter theme, and is the sound which fills the beginning of the original version of this song, which 50 years later is still inspiring. One wishes that Charles Hardin Holly had lived to hear the glorious heights his song continues to scale. From Oakland, California, transforming, celebrating, re-enlivening, and obviously loving an American classic with their own version, which is by many measures now its own kind of classic, this is one of the greatest songs ever made. This is Rogue Wave, and Every Day on the Rick Emerson radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A Kansas man finally tracked down his birth mother to find out that she is a world-famous bearded lady. Richard Lorenk, 33, has been reunited with Vivian Wheeler, 62. Well, he's 33. Yes, 62, who once worked in a circus sideshow. After 6 weeks of investigating, the Kansas Department of Social and Rehabilitation Services put him in touch with his mother. Ms. Wheeler inherited her mother's condition. Ms. Wheeler inherited her mother's condition of hypertrichosis, also known as werewolf syndrome, which manifests itself through the growth of excessive facial hair from a very early age. She was also born a hermaphrodite with both male and female reproductive organs.
Wow.
Upon seeing her baby's facial fuzz and genitalia, her mother, who wanted a girl, instructed the doctor to remove the male parts.
Give me some fire!
Meanwhile, her father, despite being embarrassed by his daughter's condition, sent her to work in sideshows as a 5-year-old girl and earning up to $1,000 a month to be sent home to her family.
By the way, I like how it says, despite being embarrassed of her condition, he sent her to work in sideshows.
Yeah, well,
as though that itself is like a ringing endorsement of how much he loves her.
Well, he didn't lock her in a closet, so I guess it's like...
Okay.
Eventually, she was recognized by the Guinness Book of World Records as having the longest beard ever grown by a female, 11 inches.
This is still the mom we're talking about
here. Right, this is the
mom. Okay, and the daughter was like, where do I come from? And then,
well, actually, it was a man. The mom, apparently comes from a long line of this. The mom inherited this from her mother.
Okay.
And so, and then was...
And
was born a hermaphrodite, turned into just a girl, sent off to the sideshow. So her son Richard was taken away from her when he was 3 and adopted at age 7.
Sent off to the sideshow.
Ms. Wheeler is now considering leaving her home in Bakersfield to live closer to her son in Kansas.
Okay. That's awesome. You know, well, I mean, look, I mean, you know, everybody, every family has their business, I suppose. So if you're, but he's, okay, but it started with the son who was sent away, but the mom comes from a long line of bearded women.
Right. Or at least from one bearded woman.
So yes. Proving that there is someone for everyone, is there not?
I guess so.
Everyone has someone who loves them.
Sure.
Okay.
Or so everyone has a mother somewhere, even if...
She's bearded.
Yeah.
And in fact is a record holder for the longest beard.
Right.
Let's do one more here.
Okay. Northern Iowa authorities say they've cleaned up a slippery mess after a tipped semi-trailer spilled Jell-O and pudding cups across a county road. The Floyd County Sheriff's Office said 52 pallets of gelatin and pudding fell from a trailer when its top ripped open early Tuesday. It took crews 3 hours to clean up the debris. The Sheriff's Office said 39-year-old semi-trailer driver Eric Young of Charleston, South Carolina, wasn't able to make a turn and went into the ditch where the rig rolled onto its side. Young and 32-year-old passenger Martin Brandon of Bridgeport, Connecticut, suffered minor injuries. The Globe-Gazette in Mason City reports damage to the semi-trailer is estimated at $50,000.
By the way, someone says, this is very kind of you to say so. Somebody says, your Bill Cosby impression is legendary. That's nice of you to make. That's not really true, but Rick Emerson appreciates the comment regardless. Thank you so much. I appreciate your support. Mm. Hey, speaking of support, so we mentioned at the top of the show, I mentioned that the Rick Emerson show is brought to you by, among other folks, Sorrell's Vintages, and you can find them at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. And I mentioned that I own a lamp from Sorrell's, and it's just one of the most it's one of the most beautiful things I own. I'll actually have to get a picture of it and bring it in. If you have been to Sorrell's Vintages, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, if you spend any time on Hawthorne, you have probably walked by this store, you know, a million times. You know, my wife actually, and I should say that, you know, this is totally true, that my wife and I have been going there for years. It really is
It's just a beautiful, fantastic place filled with beautiful, fantastic furniture. And when you talk about vintages, here's the thing, and this is a delicate sort of situation because you know what I'm talking about, because you are a stylish person, and I don't mean that in an Eddie Haskell kind of way. I mean, here's the thing. It's like Janine Garofalo said one time. She said that she may not be the funniest person on earth, but she knows what a hack is, and she tries not to be that.
Yes.
Now, you are self-deprecating sometimes, but you also know what is tacky most of the time, and you know what is sort of cheesy, and you know.
Right.
And it's like, and I don't have anything against, you know, I don't have anything against like your kind of flea market, thrift store kind of a place where it's like, you know, it's a guy and he's just got like a crammed room full of dusty stuff. You know, that he just, you know, he's stuck in the back of a wagon and he jammed it into his tiny little, hovel, you know, where there's like a bunch of cats running around. I mean, there's a certain horrible charm to those. But I got to tell you, when you talk about a vintage place, Sorel's Vintage is just like a world away from that. I mean, it is not that at all. And when I say retro, I don't just mean, you know, something that's from last year or something that's from 100 years ago. They focus on a very specific kind of vintage. And it's what we call like the Mad Men era or the Atomic Age.
Mid-century modern.
We were talking to Anton and Daniel, who were, you know, the guys who run this place. And Daniel is the owner and Anton. Is the sort of overlord and manager and maven, and has a degree in art history, which shouldn't have surprised me. He said the same thing. What is the term again?
Mid-century modern.
And I never knew that that was the actual term for it. I always just said it was like that stuff from the Atomic Age. And if you watch, and this sounds like such an obvious thing to say, but it really is true. If you watch Mad Men, that's exactly the period we're talking about. And this is a store where you go there, and when I say it's one of a kind, like I don't mean that like there's no factory churning this stuff out where they're going to, you know, like get a same order of it next week. What they do is, rather than being a store where people just dump stuff or people like just bring in things and they go, I'll buy it for $5 and sell it for $10, what Daniel and Anton do is they actually go out and they go to sales, they go to other cities, they go to other towns around the Northwest, and they find the very best vintage furniture that they possibly can from, you know, the 50s and the 60s and some of the early 70s stuff in America. They bring it back and they have it at the store. And there really is just no way to describe this adequately without you going and just looking at it, and you'll understand exactly what we're talking about. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, you asked me if I'd ever been there, and I hadn't. And then in the last hour during Legion of News, and you mentioned it's the place right across the street from the Baghdad. And as soon as you said that, I thought, that place. Because, yes, many's the time I have stood outside and looked in the window of that store and gone, ooh.
I have to go in.
Ooh, is that a Haywood Wakefield table?
Great place.
They have great stuff.
And there's actually two sides to the store. And I don't mean like two sides to every store. I mean like literally there's two sides. Because it started out as a pure vintage store. And then they started adding new items. And now they've kind of come full circle where they do a lot of the vintage stuff. And there is a separate side of the store, which you've probably seen if you've been on Hawthorne. It's the side, I used to call it the metal sign store, because there was like the thing in the window that said like, hippies use side door or whatever. It was like a lot of the sort of faux retro stuff from, you know, early on. And they have a lot of really, really great. I've learned to loathe a couple of words in advertising. One of them is edgy and the other one is quirky. But sometimes it's the only word that really works. But if you look on the new side of Sorel's, they've got these beautiful framed. These are sort of faux blow ups of comic book panels, comic book frames, like a single a panel from a comic book that's been blown up and the colors have been brightened and then it's been framed. And it's just beautiful looking. But you walk over to the vintage side, and we'll be talking more about this in the weeks to come. It really is. It's really, they have just found like the best of the best, and they put it all in one place, and it's all a different variety, different selection again, because it's, you know, if they don't find another one, they're not going to stock another one, and yet it's all from essentially the same period, so you're going to be able to go there every month, and you're going to, you know, every couple of weeks, and you're going to find a different selection, but it's all going to sort of work together in your house, or if you're, you know, decorating, you know, your apartment or something, because it all comes from the same type of design in the same era. And, you know, and the prices are actually, and I have to say, the prices are actually, I told Daniel that I was going to try not to use this phrase exactly, because he and I talked about this, and I finally said that there was no real way around it. The store looks far more expensive than it is. And I know it sounds like I'm damning with faint praise or something like that, but I mean it in the best possible way. Because you look in the window from the street and you go, I can never afford to buy it. But you go inside and the prices are far lower than you would anticipate because it's so gorgeous.
And the other thing is that with the holidays coming too, it's like if you have to buy a present for somebody, you know, you can buy crap at like Target or just, you know, at a department store. But I have found so often if I buy somebody a really cool vintage ashtray or a lamp or something like that in a high-end store like Sorel's, it costs me less than it would cost me to buy, like, some new piece of crap. And people are just awestruck by the fact you bought them this really great one of a kind
And you can
thing.
Tell the real thing, too. That's the other thing. It's like you could, I mean, you could just go to whatever. You like the big box store, you know, or Target, you know, and they those stores are certainly, you know, they have their place, you know, whatever. I have no problem with that. But you can tell when they've just made something brand new that's trying to look like something that your grandmother would have had. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't look right. It's like CGI. You know, your eye can just tell the difference and it feels wrong. You know, and so everything from they have couches, they have bureaus, they have dressers, they have tables, they have lamps, and all the way down to, as you just said, to ashtrays, you know, and just things, you know, small decorative items that are all authentically from the 50s and the 60s and 70s. So I mean this with all sincerity. You just do yourself a favor. Go by. You walk in. You take one look. You will know exactly what we're talking about. You're not going to regret it. If you find out more, you go to Sorel's Vintages, 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, right across from the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books. That is 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, right across the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books. All right. As we get ready to wrap this up, we should say that we will be here tomorrow. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving. So we'll be here doing Legion of News at noon. And then at 1 p.m., shortly thereafter, after a brief musical interlude, we'll have the Thanksgiving installment of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Coming up today at 4 p.m. Pacific, Dawn Taylor at Cascadia.fm with Ham-Fisted Radio, starring herself and Bobby Fatboy Roberts. And also later on today at the Ham-Fisted Radio .com and so forth. We want to thank our guests, including CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop.
OMG.
It was just, what?
I said OMG.
Okay, I thought you said HOMG there for a second.
No,
I thought
OMG.
You were referencing like an Asian film with which I wasn't familiar.
Where's my dinner?
OMG. Thank you. Which caught me totally by surprise. I can't get it. I think about it now and it just makes me all flibbity-jibbity. Rat-a-tat-tat. Also, Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. The Rick Emerson Radio Program comes to you live each and every weekday from high atop the Milk Packing District here in... Milk Packing District here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and so forth. As always, the Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all, our many fine business partners. Thank you for joining us. Tune in tomorrow, won't you please? It is Wednesday, November 24th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, brief interlude here, followed by an encore of Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.